Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, April the 19th, 2013, and it's our Earth Day show. Earth Day, of course, officially happens on April 22nd. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-hosts, Alyssa Ray and Jackie McIntosh.
Hello.
And congratulations to Tim Aretz, who is also here with us as our brand new certified control room operator.
Thank you very much.
And also welcome to Eleanor Boyle, who's in the studio with us today.
Hi, thanks, Allison.
Today also marks week two of the Vancouver Co-op Radio Spring Member Drive. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement toward a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. For our feature interview today for our Earth Day themed show, we have, as I said, local author and educator Eleanor Boyle here in the studio with us. Eleanor has recently published a book called High Stakes, Why and How to Eat Less Meat, which focuses largely on explaining the environmental impacts of the industrial meat production system. And that is what we'll be talking about with her today. Also, stay tuned to learn how you can win a copy of her book, which we will be announcing later on in the show. And for our second interview, we'll have Isha Datar with us, who is the director of a nonprofit research organization called New Harvest. New Harvest is a group that is working to support research technology in more environmentally friendly alternatives to traditional meat. And one of those alternatives is by producing cell-cultured meat flesh for consumption, which you may know as being called in vitro meat. Isha will be on the show with us today to tell us about how this is done and to answer questions about the environmental impacts of this new technology and what lies ahead in its future to feed the citizens of this planet.
All right, and I'm going to tell you a bit about my story with Animal Voices and why we need members. So I'm actually one of Animal Voices' newer contributors. I joined the show back in October of 2012, primarily because I felt like I had a lot to say on these important issues, and I often didn't have or feel like I had much of a outlet to speak about them in a positive, safe environment. So Animal Voices gave me that. I felt very welcomed from everyone on the Animal Voices team as well as Co-op Radio, and I learned a lot in the whole process, both about animal rights as well as radio. And I feel that the show is just so important for people to be able to hear, whether they need to support in their own transition to compassionate living or want to know more about the issues that affect our animal friends. Animal Voices is one of the many shows that are only available because of Co-op Radio. Co-op has the wonderful open format where you have the ability and freedom to speak about things that you would never be able to hear on normal radio stations. So it's really our members that allow us to speak these truths and have these wonderful guests that we are allowed to have on the show, like Eleanor today, and just keep us on the air. So please, if you want to keep Animal Voices bringing you fun reviews, animal-related news, interviews, animal issues, and features, we ask you to become a member of Animal Voices, a member of Co-op Radio on behalf of Animal Voices. We do need to raise the money to keep the show on the air. As a token of our appreciation, for every member who donates between now and April 26th, we'll put you in a draw for a selection of 5 amazing prizes. And those prizes are a copy of the book Vegan Secret Supper, Bold and Elegant Menus from a Rogue Kitchen by Marita Anderson, a copy of the book High Stakes, Why and How to Eat Less Meat by Eleanor Boyle, a copy of the book Eating Vegan in Vegas, ebook by Paul Graham, a copy of the book Vegan Cooking for Carnivores, Over 125 Recipes So Tasty You Won't Miss the Meat by Roberta Martin, and a $10 gift certificate to Eternal Abundance, the raw vegan restaurant located in Vancouver. The gift certificates we can mail to you, but if you choose one of the other prizes, you do have to come down to the station to pick it up. Also, for every new person who makes a donation to CFRO and therefore joins as a member, you will have the chance to win an additional prize, dinner for two at the lovely Rhizome Cafe here in Vancouver. So to make a donation, you can do this a few ways. You can call us right now at 604-684-8494, and someone will take your pledge on the phone.
That'll be Alyssa.
Yes. Or you can go to cooperadio.org and click on Donate to Co-op Radio on the upper right-hand corner of the site and make your member donation there on behalf of Animal Voices. So make sure to mention us. And we'll announce the winners of the draw on the air after the member drive. So make sure you you donate and become a member. We ask you in advance for your consideration to help keep our important program on the air in Vancouver and around the world.
And I just wanted to mention, too, that the donations are tax deductible.
Yes.
We are a nonprofit organization, charitable organization, registered with Canada. So that's another incentive. Thank you, Jackie.
No problem.
Events.
Oh, yes. So we have some Earth Day stuff coming up, as it is Earth Day on Monday the 22nd. This weekend, actually tomorrow, is the Earth Day Parade, and it will start in Commercial and Broadway and go ahead over to Grandview Park, where you'll be greeted by a celebration complete with speakers, musicians, possibly some juggling, and all the good things that come with gathering together as a community to address the issues and things that matter most today. This event will be open to the public, but is targeted at students and seeks to build on the tremendous success of last year's event, which brought close to 2,000 people. Our hope is to emphasize our desire for urgent action on a variety of issues, especially the lack of environmental action, and to act as a catalyst for change towards a greener, more sustainable future. So there'll also be continue to focus on local issues such as tankers, pipeline, and fracking, along with efforts to raise awareness about the 1.5 degree threshold scientists use as a climate marker.
And that's in Vancouver, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And that will take place from 11 to 3, and that's including the festival.
I bet there's a lot of other in Earth Day type parades and that happening all over the world,
I think,
too.
So yeah.
Check it out wherever you are.
This is the biggest one that I've heard of.
Really? In the whole world?
No, in Vancouver area.
Oh,
sorry,
okay.
In our area.
What I mean is every city has
for
one.
Sure. I would hope so. Another thing coming up is Earth Day Potluck and Film Vegucated, and that is hosted by Vancouver Meatless Meetup, and that's Sunday, April 21st, at 6 p.m. And for more info, just please go to www.meetup.com/meatlessmeetup. Everyone is asked to bring a dish to share free of all animal products for this event.
And we already have about 100 people that have RSVP'd for that event, so it's going to be a really big one if you want to taste a lot of really delicious vegan plant-based food and also learn more about lowering your footprint on the environment by watching Vegucated, which is an amazing film. And we've spoken to Marissa Miller-Wolfson on the show before, who's the filmmaker of that. So you can check that out on our show, animalvoices.org, if you do a search for Vegucated.
Great. And a little more risque event coming up is Naked PETA Protesters.
That just came in our email today, right? I'm glad you got that.
So they'll be painted as the Earth in body paint to ask Vancouver to go vegan in order to save the planet. Body painted activists will inform Canadians that eating vegan meals is the most effective way to spare resources and save our planet. So this will take place at the intersection of West Georgia and Granville Streets in Vancouver. And this will be on Monday, April 22nd, so actual Earth Day, at noon sharp.
It's going to be warm that day, which is a good thing for the naked
people.
It is supposed to be a lovely day that day,
so
that's great. It's not going to be rainy like it has been.
And to RSVP, you can email sophiac@peta.org, or for more info, please visit peta.org. All right, and next weekend is the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale.
Yay.
And we will be having a local event on behalf of that at 3G Restaurant. You can buy some delicious vegan baked goodies and support animal rescue and advocacy. This will be a bake sale outside 3G, like I said. And the proceeds of this will be donated to Hearts on Noses Pink Sanctuary in Mission, BC, which is a great organization. I actually did some volunteering there last week, and it was wonderful.
We're going there in a few weeks,
yeah,
right?
We are. We're going to do a field trip, so that'll be good for the pigs and for us. Another exciting thing coming up that I'm actually very excited about is the Ghosts in Our Machines film screening, which is at the Doxa Film Festival. And tickets can be purchased now. And you can look online at doxa.ca for more info. And this is just a film from Joanne MacArthur, photographer, documenting the lives of these animals that are the ghosts in our machine. So it's just a beautiful film, and I'm looking very forward to seeing that. And also, next week, Alyssa will be doing a review on that movie. So
on the show.
Exactly. So that'll be exciting. And just one more quick event is Vita Vegan Con. This is taking place at the Portland Art Museum in Portland, Oregon. And it's 3 full days of classes, food, talks, exhibitors, and community. So they're packing around 350 vegan bloggers, cookbook authors, blog enthusiasts, future bloggers, and special guests all under one roof. So it's just a great networking opportunity for all bloggers and people that write about vegan issues.
Which is why I'm going.
Yes. Oh, you're going. Great.
I am going.
Great.
Well, thank you for that.
No problem.
Jackie. For our feature interview today, we have author and educator Eleanor Boyle live in the studio with us. Eleanor has been teaching and writing for 25 years and now focuses on food systems and their social, environmental, and health consequences. She holds a Master of Science in Food Policy and has taught extensively at the university level, including courses in sustainability, and has presented at international conferences on food issues. She has also recently written a book called High Stakes, How and Why to Eat Less Meat, and comes to us today for our Earth Day show to speak about the environmental consequences of the industrial meat production system as extensively researched and written about in her book. Hello, Eleanor, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hi there, Allison.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today to speak with us about the environmental and industrialized meat production.
Well, thank you for having me. It's I'm really happy to be on an animal show talking about environmental issues, because this issue of the amounts of meat that we eat and the ways that we produce it is both probably the largest animal issue on the planet and also a very serious environmental issue. So they come together really importantly.
Right, and which is exactly why all this, as soon as I knew that your book came out last year, I'm like, we have to have her on the show for Earth Day. It's going to be perfect.
Thanks, Allison.
So, and it's so appropriate, too, that you live here in Vancouver, so you're able to come right in. So yay for local authors.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
I mean, some of your listeners may not agree entirely with the premise of my book, which is that it's okay to eat meat just a lot less and don't support factory farms. There's a fundamental debate that goes on about whether humans have the moral right at all to eat animals. And I completely respect your many listeners who will say no, that we don't. But in this book and in this project, I was trying to go for that huge middle ground of people who frankly couldn't imagine being vegetarian. And I want to say to them, you too can be part of the solution by eating a lot less meat, by buying animal products that have been compassionately and sustainably raised, and by urging your governments to change the ways that we produce livestock and food generally.
Right. Your book is actually, it's divided into two parts like that. The first part is explaining the whole deal, right? And that's what we're going to be more focusing on today. The second part's great, solutions for everyday people. So speaking about the issues of the environment and meat, it's becoming more commonly known now these days that meat production is playing a large part in the global warming crisis. In your book, you say that meaty contributions to climate change can be summarized in a few short words: deforestation and gas production. So I'd like to talk about both of these effects. Can you start by explaining the deforestation factor when it comes to producing meat and climate change?
Absolutely. Most people are well aware today that the cutting down of tropical rainforests around the world, and particularly in the Amazon, are huge environmental problems. So why does it keep being done? Well, there's lots of scientific evidence, both from excellent environmental organizations like Greenpeace, and even from conservative international organizations like the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, that the main driver of deforestation is meat production, pure and simple. The vast majority of Amazon rainforest that has come down is now being used either for pasture or for feed production. The feed production is largely soy, and some people have the mistaken impression that it must be for tofu burgers. So
right.
Vegetarians must be the problem.
It's not the tofu eaters.
Not the case at all. The vast majority of that soy goes directly to feed livestock for what I call the meat binge. People have become accustomed to much more meat than can be produced sustainably or compassionately.
And please tell us about gas production from animal agriculture and climate change.
Well, all of the major greenhouse gases get significant contributions from, again, the amounts of meat that we produce today and the ways that we produce it. So first of all, CO2, meat production today is highly mechanized, but as well, the deforestation that we just talked about, when you grind up a whole lot of trees, which store fabulous amounts of carbon and throw them into the atmosphere, that produces a lot of global warming. But as well, some of your listeners will have heard of the other greenhouse gases, methane and nitrous oxide, that come largely from meat production, both from the very large amounts of manure that the animals produce and from the fertilizer used on the feed crops.
So let's talk about poo. Obviously, these billions of animals on this earth who we are producing for their flesh and secretions are going to be creating a heck of a lot of manure, and that can't be good for the environment. So people may be confused by this statement because manure is good for our crops, right? Can you please explain the detrimental issues against our environment when animal manure is involved?
Yes, people will sometimes say, hey, livestock manure is great fertilizer. Yes, it's great fertilizer in small amounts.
There's too much of it.
Unfortunately, today we have very large amounts. And the problem is that we have large amounts in very concentrated areas around these factory farms. Factory farms crowd thousands and thousands of animals into small buildings, and they all produce nature calls every day. So we get these mountains of manure in these specific areas, and we can't possibly have enough land nearby to simply use the manure as good fertilizer, and it becomes waste. And many people would call it toxic waste because of the amounts of chemicals that are in it.
So how is it being, I guess my question is, what is being done with it? CAFO lagoons, for instance. Can you talk about those?
For anyone who's been in factory farm country or even seen photographs of them, they know that outside of these large buildings are these football field sized
ponds. I've actually never seen any. Do we have those even in BC? We must.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I've flown over for my research, Saskatchewan and North Carolina, which are huge pig producing areas, and seen them, and the numbers of them and the size of them are unbelievable. Basically, the manure and the feces is thrown into a very large vat, and that's supposed to be while it awaits being used as fertilizer, but the fact is that so much of it has nowhere to go because there's nowhere to use it for fertilizer. Some of it seeps into the groundwater. Some of it, after a good rain, overflows and messes up our waterways. A lot of the water pollution that we get in North America and around the world basically comes from excessive livestock manure.
Can you talk to us about what happened in the year 2000 in Walkerton, Ontario, just for as a Canadian angle on this point?
Walkerton's a great example for listeners who remember it. It was just over 10 years ago, and this small Ontario town experienced a contamination of the town's entire water supply. 7 people died and a lot of people were made sick. And again, our media needs to get a little deeper in its investigations. It was on front page of the newspaper every day, but it was always about, isn't it so terrible that our water investigation and regulation isn't better? But if we step back, we have to ask, where did the contamination come from in the first place? And it came from cattle. Too many livestock in too small a space. Again, it all comes back to, rather than sort of wringing our hands and going, oh, isn't this terrible? There's nothing we can do. Yes, there's definitely something we can do. We can cut way back on our meat production and stop requiring that parts of our country be dedicated to animals rather than to people.
Right. I didn't explain what CAFOs are for our listeners who don't know. Concentrated animal feed operations, basically factory farming. Can you tell us about, and I know you did research on this for your book, about how the presence of these CAFOs in people's neighborhoods are affecting them?
Well, it's really interesting because the ways that we eat meat and produce meat today are, as we've talked about, they're animal welfare or animal rights issues. They're also environmental issues, but they're also social justice issues. I met people in North Carolina who lived very nice rural lives until a factory farm moved into their neighborhood. All of a sudden, the air was polluted. They couldn't drink the water. They couldn't even sit outside and enjoy the backyard anymore. And as I document in the book, and as North Carolina researchers have documented, factory farms almost invariably go into neighborhoods that are black and poor.
Right.
So it is not wealthy neighborhoods that get factory farms.
It's the wealthy people protest it, right? I read that in your book.
Absolutely. So it's a social justice issue.
I've heard that called environmental racism. Sorry.
Yeah. I talk about that in the book. It's a really important point that people don't realize. Yeah.
You mentioned water there. I wanted to talk about that specifically. In your book, you state that as much as 70% of human-used fresh water is for agriculture.
Yeah.
I wondered, Eleanor, if you could tell us more about that and where all the water is going when it comes to raising animals for consumption.
Thanks, Alyssa. Yeah. A lot of people know that there are serious water shortages around the world. Water tables are going down in almost all regions of the globe. Droughts are becoming normal. So we need to figure out ways to save water. And if we look at food production, even the most conservative estimates show that producing meat requires at least 10 times as much water as producing plant foods. And part of that is because animals need to drink water just like we do, but a lot of it is for the production of the huge amounts of feed that are grown to fatten them. So a lot of it's invisible, but meat production requires tons of water use.
And it's not the, people might think, you know, we're surrounded by water, it's everywhere. And as you state in your book, it's not the salt water, it's the fresh water. And we are running into shortages of this in our world, right?
A very small percentage of the water in the world is fresh water, which is exactly what we need. So to eat a vegetarian or vegan or a largely vegetarian diet, you are taking in implicitly much less water, and therefore being much better to the environment and to everyone around you.
Well, another environmental consequence that comes into play is in the production of too much meat and therefore too many animals is the loss of biodiversity, which you go into in your book. You say this is an example of the breadth and depth of these consequences. Can you explain the roles that meat production plays in the loss of our Earth's biodiversity?
There are really two ways in which the amounts of meat that we eat today lower biodiversity. One, contributes so much to deforestation, which of course takes away habitat of countless plants and animals. Mm-hmm. But a second way that meat production production and consumption as it's done today undermines biodiversity is that it's part of that unfortunate trend in agriculture today. Again, some of your listeners may be aware of this to some degree, of food production increasingly being in the hands of small companies. A small number of large companies which do not like biodiversity. It's a nuisance for them. They want to produce fewer and fewer species or breeds of animals or plants to make it easier for them to produce on a mass scale. So, for example, chickens 100 years ago in North America, there were between 50 and 100 different breeds of chicken produced. Today, there are 2 to 3 what are called industrial composite hybrids that are the basis of most of the chicken that you see in the store today.
And people just wouldn't know that because we're so disconnected from where our food comes from. We don't see 60 breeds of chickens running around like you might have in the 1920s. We don't see that now. In fact, we don't even really see any of the chickens that are bred for consumption. But when you do see pictures of them, you normally see like the basic white chickens that are bred, industrial composite hybrids.
And most of them are the same breeds. Of course, there are people working on the right side of this problem who are trying to revive heritage breeds. For people who do eat meat, they're growing organically. They're producing the animals in a way that is compassionate, and they are trying to bring back some of the old breeds. So good things are happening.
One thing that I found interesting that you said was that when fewer species are available, food systems are more vulnerable to changes in conditions such as new pests and new weather patterns. So it really is all interconnected, and I found that to be a really interesting part of your book.
Well, it's a really beautiful and a really moving point, and I hope that most listeners have a sense of that. Biodiversity is the way of the world,
right.
And it's because that is... That's the way it's supposed to be. Human beings are diverse, the plant world is diverse, the animal world is diverse, and that, among other things, protects against, as you say, adverse weather events, pests of various kinds. It allows the world to continue despite acute events.
So why do developed nations need to take the lead in eating less meat? You say that it's wealthy countries that need to lower consumption.
Well, I really feel that it's up to those of us, first of all, who have largely caused the problem, to start working on solving it. People in Canada, the United States, Australia, and some of the other developed countries, we are the ones that eat the most meat per capita, mm-hmm. by far. For example, China right now, if you compare the Americans to the Chinese, Americans per capita eat 3 times as much meat as the Chinese do. Some people will say, well, I mean, look at China. They're eating so much more meat now than they used to. Maybe they should solve the problem. They're still eating much less per capita than we are, we in the North American sense. And secondly, for most of us, especially living in cities like Vancouver with such wonderful food and good vegetarian restaurants, and we have so many other options. It's not as if this is our only option. We look at a restaurant menu and it's meat, 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 meat. But down at the bottom, there are a few vegetarian options. That's what we need to eat a lot more.
There's usually one or two.
Getting a little better.
And you say that convincing people to lower their intake won't be easy. What is the premise of that statement for you?
Well, I've sort of changed my mind on that over the years. I've been working on this issue for about 10 years, mm-hmm. and I spent about 5 years writing the book. When I first started, I would say to people, you know, we should all eat less meat. People would laugh and go, oh, people will never eat less meat. They love it too much. You know what? Things have changed a lot in the last couple of years. Americans, according to U.S. Department of Agriculture statistics, Americans who are real meat eaters are eating less meat per capita than they were 5 years ago. Fantastic.
Yeah.
People can change. Social movements, no matter how difficult they seem, can take hold. There's so many examples of ways in which seemingly impossible problems did in fact make their way towards solution. I actually think that people can eat a lot less meat and already are starting to.
And I think that they are going to have to if we're going to be able to sustain the planet, which is what is the main message in your book. In your book, you say that the meat problem raises questions about the kind of society we want to live on. Can you expand on what you mean by this?
Well, there are a lot of values questions that are at the basis of this. And again, for some of your listeners, the basic values issue may be that we shouldn't eat animals at all. But whether you believe that or whether you believe it's okay to use animals for our purposes to some degree, there are values issues about how we should treat other species with which we share this planet. Do we want to be kind or do we not want to be kind? And also there are social justice issues. How do we want to treat other people? Do we mm-hmm. want to see poor rural people being victimized by the presence of factory farms in their neighborhoods? Yeah. There are values issues here. And numerous times during the research of the book, I cried at the evidence of how our behavior is hurting so many animals as well as people. But we can turn it around.
And solutions. Let's talk about some solutions that you propose in your book.
Well, I basically say there are 3 things we can do. One, anybody. Everybody can eat a lot less in the way of animal products. Secondly, for those people who do consume animal products, we can look for better stuff and be willing to pay more for it. Increasingly, there are all kinds of producers out there who really care about these issues. You're going to have to pay more. That's what we're going to have to do. Food prices are an issue for some people among us, but you know, for most of us, we could pay more for food if we changed our priorities. We've got all kinds of stuff we don't need. We could pay more for food if we prioritized it. And thirdly, we absolutely have to talk to policymakers about this.
Yeah.
I do, and lots of other people do, urge your MLAs, your MPs, anybody you know who's in a position of policymaking that this is an important issue and that there are things they can do about it.
Well, thank you, Eleanor, for coming on our Earth Day show today to speak with us about the environmental consequences of industrial meat production. To learn more about Eleanor's book, High Stakes, Why and How to Eat Less Meat, and I do encourage our listeners to read it. We've just basically have just scratched the surface here of all the issues. It's a really good book. Please visit the book's website at www.highstakes.com. book.com. There's even a book trailer on there, which I see more and more authors are doing these days. For every person who makes a donation to Co-op Radio between now and April 26th on behalf of the Animal Voices show, you will also be entered in a draw to win a copy of this book. Thanks so much. Yes, you can say.
Any listeners I'd love to speak with as well, and anyone who wants a one-on-one dialogue, write to me at my website or at my Gmail address, eleanorboyle@gmail.com. Love speaking with people about these issues, even if you don't agree with me. Love discussion.
Thanks so much, Eleanor.
Like what you hear on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM? Donate to the station and become a member of Vancouver's only community-owned and run radio station. As a member-owned cooperative, Co-op Radio doesn't have one owner. We have about 30,000 owners. We don't accept commercial advertising. We generate our revenue through donations from our members and listeners. Donate to Co-op Radio, become a member, and help us continue to make independent alternative radio. Visit cooperadio.org to donate today.
And now for some news. So just tying in with our last interview, a new study came out in the last couple months, at least, from Loma Linda University. They looked into greenhouse gas emissions from various diets, from omnivore to vegan. And while a lot of studies have made assumptions about the environmental benefits of plant-based diets, researchers at Loma Linda have apparently been able to provide clear evidence of these benefits by analyzing real-world data from 96,000 Seventh-day Adventists around the U.S. and Canada. The study found that vegans' greenhouse gas emissions were 41.7% lower than the non-vegetarians. Lacto-ovo-vegetarians were 27.8% lower. Pesco-vegetarians were 23.8% and semi-vegetarians were at about 20%. Lower greenhouse gas emissions than the meat eaters that they studied. One thing to note is that the non-vegetarians they studied were from the Seventh-day Adventist community, and their meat consumption is less than the general population, so the numbers are actually a little bit higher than those, presumably. And for your information, Loma Linda University is a Seventh-day Adventist coeducational health sciences university in California. The study has not been peer-reviewed yet and will take a few months to get published.
Well, that's really interesting. Thanks for sharing that. It's so appropriate for today's Earth Day.
Yeah, definitely. And another thing I found, Mother Jones magazine, which I really love, was posted online, at least. I'm not sure if it was in print, but it's a criticism of one of the huge sustainable seafood labels. And so it's the Marine Stewardship Council's blue label. And their principles for sustainable fishing are too lenient and discretionary, according to a new analysis published in Biological Conservation. The MSC label may be misleading both consumers and conservation funders. The World Wildlife Fund, one of the biggest environmental groups, and Unilever, one of the world's biggest seafood processors, founded the Marine Stewardship Council in 1997 to provide the best environmental choice in seafood. That's in quotes, of course. Over the years, the prestige of the MSC Sustainable Blue Label has been eroded, challenged, and at times undermined by the scientific assessment of the fisheries and genetic analysis of fish going to market. One example in the study, they found great fault with a sustainable label awarded to Canada's longline sword fishery off the Atlantic coast because of its extraordinarily high bycatch of other species. for the 20,000 swordfish sustainably hooked in Canadian waters yearly, longliners also catch 100,000 sharks, 1,200 endangered loggerhead turtles, and 170 leatherback turtles.
So what does it say about these labels when they're really, it seems like they're kind of meaningless? What is the criteria that is involved for being able to get the stamp of approval?
Apparently, yeah, there just really isn't that much. And the report showed that there was like 19 formal complaints made about specific fisheries. And that makes up 35% of the fish products that have that label.
What do you think about this, Eleanor?
Yeah, Alyssa and Allison, it's a really important point. Let me say a couple things. One is that eco-labels, in my opinion, are a work in progress, and nobody set them down as perfect. They are evolving, number one. Number two, it's really important not to look at information like this and get all pessimistic and go, oh, eco-labels don't mean anything. I've heard people say, oh, organic doesn't mean anything, because they've heard that there are arguments within the organic community, particularly with the involvement now of large companies, on how strict should the standards be. We really need eco-labels. We need information that consumers can use, and so we've got to stay on board with the idea of eco-labels, but simply as activists and as citizens, make sure that we're urging them to keep their standards high.
I think we need to ask questions.
Sure.
Yeah.
Similarly with, I guess, land animals, so SPCA certified free range organic, they don't mean what people think when it comes to animals in general. So encouraging people to do their homework and push harder for meaningful labels. I just wanted to quickly mention another case of loopholes and loose wording. The new farming regulations went into effect in January of this year in Nova Scotia, which focus on the environmental havoc that fur farms are causing over there. And according to the Association of the Protection of Fur-Bearing Animals, almost 2 million animals, mainly foxes and minks, are killed for their fur in Nova Scotia, in addition to this being torturous, of course. This causes serious contamination of water there and huge algae blooms. And the David Suzuki Foundation, or John Waring, one of the main policy advisors to them, says he doesn't think that people of Nova Scotia are any better off after the regulations and that they're totally toothless. And someone from the Sierra Club of Canada points out that they can have an extension of 6 years before they even do anything related to the regulations. So it can look really good in the press for politicians saying that they have new regulations, but there's often not much behind them and not much people actually cracking down. And that's pretty much it I have for the news, although I did find so much more this week. But it's time now to remind you again, you're listening to 100.5 CFRO Co-op Radio, broadcasting live from Vancouver. And we're asking you today to become a member of Co-op Radio. How does this relate to the environment? Let's bring this back to Earth Day and keep it on theme. So Co-op Radio has actually been covering climate change and environmental degradation for decades. One of the most the shows that speaks out on these issues all the time is Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith, which follows Animal Voices. And those kind of shows just are not available on commercial radio. We need information about air pollution, water pollution, and noise pollution, about what's going on. And these issues just aren't being covered because commercials are polluting general radio, and we need to always appease the people who fund those stations. So, of course, you want a world where your kids can breathe clean air and drink clean water and hear commercial-free radio that's important to your community. As an alternative to consumer culture that feeds the destruction of the earth, Co-op Radio is here, bringing you the important voices you need to hear. Please become a member of Co-op Radio. Radio today. Call 604-684-8494 to become a member today. We're waiting to hear your call.
Thanks so much for that. Our second interview today is with Isha Datar, who is the director of the nonprofit research organization called New Harvest. New Harvest is working to advance new alternatives to conventionally produced meat, including cultured meat, that is, meat produced in a cell culture rather than from an animal, and plant-based alternatives. One of the driving reasons to be doing work in this technology is due to the environmental stress that our planet is facing with its current mass-farmed animal production. She is here today to tell us about the research and work being done in tissue engineering and producing cell cultured or in vitro meat. Hello, Isha, and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show.
Hi there.
Thank you for coming on the show today to talk about the advancing alternatives to conventionally produced meat that your organization is working on. To start, can you please explain to us as lay people what tissue engineering is and how it applies to creating meat from cell cultures? Please explain the whole process to us.
Sure. Tissue engineering is the idea of taking a sample of tissues from a living creature, whether that be an animal or a human, and then taking that sample of tissues and then growing it out in a medium outside of the body. And then in medical applications, you might take that sample and then put it back into the human's body, or you might do something else with that sample. And what we're proposing with cultured meat is to take that sample from an animal such that the animal is not harmed in any way, and then use that sample to grow up into meat, which then could feed the planet.
So who is currently working on this technology around the world?
Right now, there is a team in the Netherlands that is probably the most publicized and furthest along, and they're publishing in the cultured meat context. There's also a team in Silicon Valley, but they are more of a startup company looking at 3D bioprinting kind of techniques, which is a little bit different. But really, the research is happening all over the world, but people are publishing in the context of medicine rather than in food, and that's just a result of where the research funding is.
Can you talk about the environmental impacts of creating cultured meat in comparison to producing farmed animals for meat?
Okay. Well, meat production as it occurs today is quite bad for our environment. About 70% of Earth's arable land is dedicated towards meat production in one way or another, whether that be crops in the States for feed or whether it be the deforestation of Brazilian rainforest for soybeans. 70% of land goes towards meat production. And similarly, about 30% of Earth's drinkable water is used towards meat production too. And then on top of that, about 15 to 24% of all greenhouse gas emissions are a result of meat production, which is estimated to be more than all of transport worldwide, including planes, buses, trains, cars. So meat production at present is very hard on our environment. And we had a study done through Oxford University, it's a peer-reviewed study, that looked at what cultured meat's environmental impact might be in comparison. And they found that cultured meat is expected to require 99% less land than meat production today, 96% less water, 45% less energy, and create 96% less greenhouse gas emissions. And while these are just estimates, this is still quite a drastic decrease compared to how we are using the environment right now with meat production.
Yeah, definitely. It's just such a huge difference from what we are using right now. Isha, non-related question. Are you on speakerphone right now?
I hear that echo too. I don't know what.
Yeah, usually that's from speakerphone. Okay, so just thought I'd check here. Now let's
Isha,
talk.
Isha, yeah. It's Eleanor here. Earlier interview manager.
Jump in with a question.
So Eleanor, our previous guest here, who's the author of a book called High Stakes, How and Why We Eat Less Meat, she wants to ask you a question.
Hi, Isha. Hi.
Hi.
Just wondering about you say there's a huge reduction in land use and mm-hmm. uses of other resources. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. What are the inputs that go into the meat production? I mean, where is it all put? I mean, there must be large storage facilities needed for all the meat you produce. I mean, what are the inputs and what does the process look like?
Mm-hmm. So the media may make you believe that this kind of product would be available soon, but the reality is it's still in very basic research stages. And we don't know what the inputs can be right now, because right now the inputs that would go into creating tissue for medical purposes is very unsustainable. And in that sense, I mean that the medium that you would use to feed the cells would be animal-based.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they've done, we're trying to push research that looks at a completely plant-based system.
Okay.
For instance, mushrooms could be used to create the amino acids to produce the cells.
Okay.
But there's still certainly a lot of research to be done, and that's an excellent question to be asking.
Okay, thanks, Isha.
No problem.
I also wanted to know about the challenges that are being faced in producing the meat in a manner where it'll be a realistic product to bring to the public. Some of the things I've been reading about are cost is a factor right now in making it mass producible as well as making it palatable for people to want to eat it. Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Yeah, cost, I think, is certainly a big issue. And that's because any kind of process that takes place in a lab is very expensive, and if you think of how easy it is to raise an animal, that can be relatively inexpensive. But at the same time, meat production today probably meat should probably cost much more than it actually does.
Right.
But cost is certainly an issue, and I think that will affect the way that this product kind of trickles into our society. It'll probably start as a very high-end food, like a molecular gastronomy kind of food, and then kind of trickle down as it becomes more cost-effective. There's also the challenge of, do we want to create a product that is very similar to meat today? Do we want it to be an exact replica of the meat we have today? And if we do, then what kind of challenges are in place? And so that's when we have to start thinking about things like, how do we exercise those cells so that they replicate real meat in their texture? And it's very interesting kind of science, but again, there's a lot of work to be done in that area as well.
So what would you say to people who eat meat now who are just weirded out by the notion of consuming lab-grown meat and accusations that, you know, it's not real meat, so I'm not going to eat it? They might feel uncomfortable eating a product like this, something that's grown in a test tube. What would you say to people like that?
Well, I would try and present them the idea of how meat is produced today. I think a lot of people who consume meat either are not totally aware of how meat is produced today, or there's a willful ignorance about that. And I relate to that because I am a meat eater, and there are times when I watch these videos and I see what's going on, and I think that this doesn't have to be the way it has to be. And we think about how meat production happens. Right now, we kind of start with the chicken, but the chicken of today is much more like chicken breast than it is chicken. It's been genetically selected over so many generations to grow super fast. There's even been talk about creating a chicken that has no feathers. So we're almost starting with a chicken and stripping away the things that make it a chicken to make it more like the food that we eat on our plate.
That's what
cultured meat is more of the idea of doing a bottom-up approach, where instead of taking a chicken and stripping away everything that it is, why don't we start from the very bottom, which is the cell, and build up meat from that, from the cell source. And in that sense, the meat in the end is still the same product. It's just a different process to get there.
And I understand as well that in creating the meat from the cell process, you could actually just customize it to exactly what you would want the meat to be like. For example, it could be healthier, less saturated fats.
Mm-hmm.
It could be safer with less contaminants and even more varieties. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yeah. So any cultured meat will be inherently more safe in terms of no contaminations compared to meats today. And that's because the meat today is very prone to contamination because, of course, animals, they live in very dirty environments now, and then they also have a gut, and inside their gut is all the bacteria, which tends to infect meat during slaughter. E. coli is a natural gut bacteria. When you have a cultured meat, there's no gut. You don't need to worry about that ever happening, and it'll take place in a sterile condition. So contamination will be one big thing that we don't need to worry about. And then the idea of tailoring the meat so that maybe there's a better profile of fatty acids, that's something that's theoretical, but I think it's something that we can definitely think about for the future.
And then just even more varieties. I was reading, like, you could produce any kind of exotic animal that aren't usually available, like, I don't know, like ostrich or bison. People aren't really eating bison for dinner every night and things like that. So that's something definitely to think about as well. Yeah. So what stage is the technology at now, and what is the timeline for cell cultured meat to be ready to start marketing to the public?
That's an excellent question. And you may have heard that the Dutch group is going to be launching a burger this summer. But this is going to be a single burger that's been made for many, many months. And it's really just a proof of concept. It's not the kind of product launch that we're used to when we're showing something and a month later it'll be in stores. It's just showing that the science is there and that this is a possible thing, but it does not yet show that this is a practical thing in terms of cost. So I don't want to give you a time estimate only because it's not so much about time, and I think it's more about funding and awareness and a desire from the public that we really do need this kind of product to exist. So what really needs to be done in the meanwhile is more research to advance this, and the stage of research is at the state where we need to do engineering and that kind of thing that makes the basic research that exists something that is actually a sustainable product, so all vegetable, plant-based inputs, and then also something that is very cost-effective.
So how realistically do you foresee cell-cultured meat taking off in a near future where our environment is so stressed that we aren't going to be able to produce the amount of animals that our global population desires for consumption because the Earth won't have the resources? How realistically do you think that cell-cultured meat could come to the rescue?
Well, I hope that we don't rely on cultured meat as our only rescue method. I hope when we see all these horrible effects that meat has on our planet, that it'll convince people that, first of all, they should probably eat less meat in general, and then maybe reach out to some other protein sources, whether those be vegetable protein sources or products like Beyond Meat or meat supplements that are created with plant proteins. Or maybe it means embracing the idea of eating insects. And maybe cultured meat would be another option in our portfolio of different proteins, maybe 10 to 15 years away. Although I don't count on me for that.
Okay.
I'm trying to advance it so that it comes sooner.
Well, that's the number, at least 10 to 15 years. So that's very interesting to think about. Maybe I'll check in with you again in 10 to 15 years. It's all been so interesting. You know, this is a topic that I've often wondered about, and I've been doing research on it this week, and you've actually have filled in a lot of the gaps that I was wondering about. So thank you for that, Isha. It's great to have you on the show, on the Animal Voices show today, to tell us about the research happening in developing in vitro meat. For more information on New Harvest, and if you would like to support their work, they are a nonprofit organization. You can visit their website at new-harvest.org. So that's newharvest.org. Thanks so much, Isha, and have a good day.
No problem. Thank you.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio here in Vancouver. And thank you so much for joining us today on the show. On next week's show, Alyssa and Tim will share their reviews of the films Forever, The Ghosts in Our Machine, and The Horse Police, which will be playing at the upcoming Doxa Film Festival. Also, we will be discussing Cow Ribbons with Liberation BC, so please join us. We here at the Animal Voices radio show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. So you can do so by liking our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please send us your suggestions and comments after the show, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, as we do appreciate all your suggestions and comments. And also please check out our website, animalvoices.org, where our shows can also be downloaded from. And if you appreciate the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topic of animal issues and compassionate living, please show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio. Because we do rely on your donations to keep this show on the air. To make a donation of $5, $10, $20, or whatever you can afford, simply go to coopradio.org and click on the Donate Now button. And remember to indicate that your donation is going towards Animal Voices. And another reminder, your donations are tax deductible. So we do appreciate your assistance. And please stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. And remember to be kind to the animals.
And I just wanted to mention, too, to phone in.
Yeah.
We'll be here answering your calls, 604-684-8494, and someone will take your calls for about the next half hour from Animal Voices. Please show your love, show your support. Talk to you next week.